you can't really deny your society to pursue personal joy and expect that society's support over time, right? No matter how high you fly, the bird will still come back down to perch.
And so you can find people coming out of the same so-called poor quality university in any country in Africa. Two outcomes, different outcomes. And very often, it's because of the attitude of the young person and the things that they did for themselves to overcome all the challenges that they may not have had in that university.
Hello there, Mindshakers.
Welcome to another episode of the Mindshake Podcast.
This podcast has been developing and growing beyond our expectations.
We would really like to thank you. That's all. We hope you enjoyed today's episode.
Hey, what's up everyone? Welcome to season 3 of the Mindshack Podcast. Mindshack is a Gen Z podcast that focuses on discussing societal issues, entrepreneurial leadership, culture, and borders on topics in psychology for Africans. In 2017, a close examination by Quartz Africa of the top 10 most populous countries in Africa showed that there are just over 740 universities serving some 660 million of Africa's 1 billion people. And that most of the university's main issues would be the lack of proper facilities and educators. However, after their high school degree, you see many parents pushing and sacrificing for their kids to take that path in order to become the successful person in the family. Although this may be true to some extent, many professionals argue with the rise of the autodidact habits, the rise of online courses, and finally, the abundance of knowledge online that a college degree is worthless in today's world, especially in Africa. This leads us to questioning which path to take and how to make that choice wisely for tomorrow's future. This is episode 7, titled, How Essential is College Education in Africa?
It's a full house today. We're going to be running this episode with two exciting guests. But before I get into introducing them, let me introduce my co-host for this episode. It's the amazing co-host, JC. JC, tell the listeners what you're excited about for this episode.
Hello, Jumbo, Dumelang. So, my end, honestly, I have one main reason. I just believe education is definitely one of the best solutions we can advance or kind of focus on in progressing and taking on the challenges we face across the continent. So, I'm just excited to frame the conversation for us young people.
Thank you. So now, as we do, we've also decided to bring on guests, like I've said. So these are really exciting guests that have been studying in this field or working in this field. So the first guest that we have is Mr. Fred Swanika, a Ghanaian entrepreneur and leadership development expert. He has launched 4 organizations, namely the African Leadership Group, and Network, which is responsible for the African Leadership Academy in Johannesburg, South Africa, the African Leadership College in Papamoose, Mauritius, and the African Leadership University in Kigali that aims to develop new age leaders in Africa. He is also now the founder of The Room, which is a platform to connect innovative professionals to a network of people and opportunities, allowing them to do more for themselves, each other, and the world. JC, do you want to introduce our next guest?
Our next guest is an entrepreneur, project manager, international affairs analyst, writer, and speaker. In his early career in print and radio journalism, he interviewed numerous personalities. This is including people from the Nobel laureates, Wallace Yonka, Lema Gboi. Today, he provides a socio-political commentary for global news outlets like the BBC, South African Broadcasting Corporation, and others. Fun fact, he's also worked for ALU as a member of the executive team, overseeing communications, marketing, program recruitment, and partnerships. This is Faith Abiodun.
Well, welcome to the both of you. My first question really would be, Fred, why did you decide to join us today?
Why did I decide to join you today? Well, because you asked me. I always enjoy talking to young people, so when you asked me, I thought I'll do it.
Well, that's a good reason. That's a good reason. How about you, Dave? Why did you decide to join us today?
I'll carry on from where Fred has stopped. I mean, firstly, you invited, but secondly, I think the subject is very interesting. And it's one that is so much debated, and we can't exhaust the conversation. I'm absolutely clear about that. So I'm excited to contribute a little bit today.
Well, we're very happy to have you both on today's episode. I'm going to start straight away with the questions. So the first question being, well, the big elephant in the room, what will higher education in Africa look like after COVID-19?
There's two ways to answer that question. There's what will higher education look like post-COVID in the most likely scenario? And then there's what should it look like? You know, if we actually use this opportunity to think differently. So what is it going to look like? I expect that for the vast majority of institutions, they'll just go back to business as usual, right? They're just waiting for the pandemic to end, and then they'll continue doing what they were doing beforehand. The pull of the status quo is very, very strong, and inertia to change is very, very high. So most universities, most regulators are just waiting for normal times to go back to what they were doing before. What do I think should happen is that universities and higher education more broadly should really use this moment to really innovate radically. Because one of the things I believe is that constraints drives innovation. And COVID is one more constraint that we have had to face. And it's forced us to do things so many differently suddenly. You know, we've had to learn how to deliver learning online and think about, you know, different modes of assessment and different ways of learning. There's just so many things that we've had to do in this moment, which some of these experiments have worked, some of these experiments have not worked. And so I think it's time to really take stock of what we've learned from doing things differently and reimagine what higher education could look like and actually accelerate access to education and accelerate innovation so that we can emerge with a better version of higher education after the pandemic, one that is more accessible, that is more relevant to the 21st century, and that is producing skills and people who will actually be ready for this new world that will emerge after COVID. And so I think it'll be a big travesty if we just go back to the status quo, although sadly I'm not too optimistic, because higher education is one of the sectors that is most resistant to change anywhere in the world. It has not changed for hundreds of years. And I'm sure most people are just waiting to go back to exactly the same things they were doing before.
What are your thoughts on the effect of learning within a dedicated learning environment, like a college campus, like a Mauritius? So as opposed to learning remotely and online?
See, I don't think that it's an either or. I think that we need a both, because go back to actually how people learn, right? Research from places like the Center for Creative Leadership shows that to effectively acquire a skill, only 10% of it can be learned in the classroom. 20% of it comes from what they call developmental relationships with your mentors and your peers and your coaches. And 70% comes from doing. We learn best by, you know, from experience. Yet today, most education is focused only on that 10%. So this debate about online versus in person, we're really only debating the 10%, right, of learning. So even if you put things online, you're only unlocking 10% of human potential by focusing only on classroom learning. You need to think about the full spectrum of learning. How do you create powerful, meaning experiences between peers, with coaches, and then more importantly, how do you get people in the field? Going out and working on projects and with internships and doing things. That's how we learn. That's why we say in the AL group, do hard things. You learn best from experience. And so, you know, if young people want to be successful, they need to realize that, sitting in the classroom all day for 3 years is not the pathway to success. You need to really be doing things in the real world if you're going to be ready for that world.
Honestly, I agree with you. It's definitely a mix of both that I prefer as a student. So my next question would be for Faith. Why do you think education is important or a representation of success in the African society?
I think, as has been widely established, education has been the one platform that has proven over time to help people make a transition in society from either abject poverty or lack of options into multiplied options. And that there hasn't been enough evidence that there's any substitute for that. Education is a leveler. Education gives options. It enlightens the mind. Mrs. Wanika talked about the sense of community. there's so much transformation that happens through the education process that cannot be replicated as of today by any source. And so many people have debated the relevance of, you know, your brick and mortar education, particularly when you think about the time investment and the financial investment that it takes to arrive at what one considers the end of that journey. Unfortunately, education is a never-ending journey. So while you might calculate the cost of college education, what you pay to an institution, or you might calculate the number of years you spend, 3 years or 4 years, you cannot estimate the tangible benefits that accrue to a person in the course of the education. And so just look through society. There are very, very, very few, if any, options that guarantee anyone the chance to move from absolute zero to multiplied options, as much as education does. So I stand by education any day just for what it makes possible.
Okay, strong points shared there. And I want to pivot then at this point to contextualizing it for people that are young students, people like us. Question here is, with more universities arising over the years in Africa, you've kind of noticed in some way a balance of asking the question whether it's even necessary for students to take that path. So that is the question. Is it necessary for students to take that path? And how does one know when to go to college in Africa and why?
There are many, many pathways to success. University is not the only one. And so if you're going to go to a university, you need to make sure you know why you're going to university. And, you know, and so to understand what your purpose in life is, and also what the purpose of the university is, and then make sure that you're going to a university that helps you achieve your purpose in life. And that's why, you know, we've been very clear that an African Leadership University, we're not here just for education's sake. And this is not a university, you know, aimed at just producing people with academic theory. From inception, we've been very clear that our end goal is leadership. We're here to develop people who want to solve problems for Africa, who want to contribute to making change, and who realize that leadership is about serving others, not about enriching yourself and getting served. And so those who want to participate in that mission, who want to solve problems, who want to really transform society, then you go to ALU. If you're looking for something else, then you shouldn't come to ALU. You need to go somewhere else. And every university should have a similar, you know, to be very clear about what they stand for and what, because universities are great for certain people, but not for everyone. And so you need to know whether you are actually ready for that, whether you need it. Because I would argue that many people do not need to go to university to be successful. And if you do need it, then are you going to the place that aligns with your values and your vision, and that ultimately with the purpose that you have for yourself?
To our listener, thank you. Thank you for all your support and feedback. We see it, and it's the fuel that ignites our journey. Please remember to like, continue to give us your comments on Instagram, subscribe, and share our podcast with at least 2 friends as we continue to improve your experience. Enjoy the rest of the episode. Okay, so then a question for Faith. Kind of stepping into experience, you are someone that someone has been a storyteller, has that kind of that mind of adapting to telling people's stories. So question to you is, why are the stories we tell about Africa and the education system important?
I'll dig into my own personal university story, my own journey, and my family as well. When I think about what university did for me and what it did for my parents, both of whom were raised by uneducated parents. And my dad is the only one of his siblings of 14 children to have more than a high school degree. And I can see the absolute difference between his life and those of his siblings, right? So my dad went all the way to university, got his bachelor's, master's degree, went all the way to PhD. But none of his siblings had even none of them even finished high school. And when you look at the differences in the journeys they have walked, not only has my dad raised his own family of, you know, 5 kids and a couple hundred people across the way whom he's had to lift up in one way or the other, he's also had to raise his own siblings and their families. The implication of his education meant that his entire family was carried on his back, and they couldn't carry themselves because he had to carry them all the way through. And it's the same thing with my mom, right? You know, trying to get an education for herself and make something of herself. And so when my generation then came out of that, having the option to even dream the way we could dream, none of my parents' siblings, none of my cousins could dream the way I could dream. They couldn't imagine the things that I could imagine. And my concise thought about university is that it's a curated space that allows you to design multiple paths for your career, right? It allows you to test assumptions about the world you want to enter. It offers you some relatively safe options to fail, right? When you do not have that safe space to try things out, every misstep you make has dire consequences, right? Whether it's the money you spend on a path, whether it's the time you invest in a path, but within an education system, you've got that space to try things out, whether it's for 3 years or 4 years or whatever. And in my case, I finished university with at least 7 very clear career paths, all of which I had tested within the time I'd spent in university, right? So I start with my own story. Every time I tell people stories, I tell mine first, because I'm able to reflect deeply on the kinds of paths that I pursued. And so I had my undergrad education in Nigeria, and I went to the US for my master's degree. And by the time I was finishing from undergrad in Nigeria, I had studied geography in the social sciences, and I'd worked, you know, in a GIS firm. So potentially I could have gone on to become a geography expert working in GIS. Potentially I could have gone all the way to, you know, to pursue academia, do my master's degree in the same field, get a PhD in the same field. I would be a professor today if I followed that path. So 2 career paths opened up immediately within the academic degree that I was studying. But I also picked up journalism from my first year in university. So I went to work for The Guardian as a reporter, and I could have become a print journalist. I also worked on radio. I could have become a radio journalist. And I did competitive public speaking. I launched a public speaking school. So I could have pursued professional training in communications as my career path. Or I could have pursued nonprofit management, which I eventually did to kick off my career. But the point was, within those 4 years that I had in university, I'd tried 7 different career options, all of which I had the option of saying no to. But what if I didn't have that safe space? When you pursue that one path and you invest behind it, the consequences are absolutely dire if you don't have that safety net to try other things out.
I can relate, really. I think the first in my family to get a degree, a bachelor. So I do relate totally to what you're saying. But we've been talking a lot about the benefits, the advantages, short-term, long-term. But what about the setbacks of tertiary education in Africa? What do you think would that be, Faith?
There are lots of things. I mean, obviously, we've been conditioned in some way to think positively about what university offers. But the experience of education itself is not the most convenient for many people. Education is still inaccessible for many, whether that is the cost of education, whether that is distance to educational options. We don't have nearly enough universities in any African country to achieve our objectives. We don't have the funding options. In America, you can afford to not have any money in your family and access loans. You don't really have we don't have a financial aid system on the continent that allows you to access education and, you know, pay it off over time, or, you know, get an opportunity into the world of work. So funding is a challenge, location is a challenge, infrastructure is a mega challenge in education. You know, I often say that the education systems we have are reflections of the societies in which our institutions are based, right? When you don't have electricity in the country, you don't have it in the university. When you don't have accessible broadband connection within the country, you don't have it in the country. And when people are frustrated per capita in a country, they are equally frustrated in the universities. And so when you're being taught by someone who has not been taught themselves, you've got a problem, right? And you think about primary education and secondary education as absolute fundamental building blocks for what happens in universities. But who gets to be a primary school teacher in Africa? Largely someone who can't be a doctor, largely someone who can't be a lawyer, who can be a banker, right? If you can't access high enough careers, well-paying careers, you then try to be a primary school teacher or secondary school teacher. So when the next generation is being built by people who couldn't make it themselves, you've got a problem. And then you try to go fix those problems in university, who are you fooling, right? Everything is broken from day one. And the frustrations that your lecturers carry on into the university. I mean, I had a professor who day one of class said, it's absolutely impossible for anyone to score more than 60% in that course. It's just like, you're not geniuses and you cannot score more than 60%. And we're all striving for 58%. And so when I scored 58%, I was hailed as a genius. And it was absolutely devastating to be celebrated for scoring 58% when you know that that is not your capacity, right? So there are lots we can unpack. Education is, for many people, a stressful journey. It takes a huge toll on your family. It takes a huge toll on you individually. But what's the trade-off? What's the alternative? If you don't pursue that path, how are you? What's your safety net? What are you benchmarking yourself against? So I would still say that the drawbacks are many, but they don't compare with the opportunities.
Okay. This is well said and actually answered part of the next question, which was getting into expenses for an individual that's in Africa about to start studying and basically the opportunity cost that kind of exists with them paying for this expense at the hope that the opportunities that come of it are going to come to fruition, essentially. So, Mr. Swanika, how important do you believe it is that each African takes that sort of, call it a creative route as well, to getting funding and making sure they end up in an institution of education at a higher education level?
I think that education is an investment. And like many things, if you have to invest wisely, right, if you want to see the returns that you like to see from that investment. So there are many, many universities that are expensive, but that do not produce results. So across Africa, 45% or almost 50% of university graduates are unemployed. And so what that means is that you make this investment and there's no guarantee of success. And so, and it takes the average college graduate in Kenya 5 years to get a job. It takes the average college graduate I've seen in Ghana about 10 years to get a job, right? So, you need to do your research and understand whether this investment is worth it or not. And, for example, one of the things we have, we're seeing in ALU from the first few classes that on average are about 90% of our graduates are employed within 6 months. Or if they're not employed, they're in graduate school or they're in, they've started their own venture or something like that, but they're in productive activity, right? So, you need to then say, okay, if I'm going to make this investment, is it worth the return that I expect? But it's also up to you as the young person, because the degree alone is not enough. The degree is often simply just a stamp. There is a lot of research that shows that the number one thing that most colleges give to talent is just a stamp. It's called the signaling theory of college, which basically says that employers and others who might want to hire you or engage with you in any way as a talented person, because there are so many people, they don't have time to know who is high quality or not, or who's worth investing in or not. So they simply use the signal of a college degree as a way to filter through all the thousands of people who might be applying for a job. They don't care what you studied or the quality of it. Oh, you've got a degree. Okay, good. At least you've been through some other hoop. Someone has made you go through another hoop. They don't even question what you learned or whether it was relevant to what they're looking for, as long as you've got a college degree. So in some of these academic studies, attribute 80% of the value of college to just the stamp that says you are in there, right? But now the next thing is, okay, so you've got the stamp, but what are you going to do to find opportunity? Are you going to hustle and go out and apply for jobs? Are you going to start your own venture? Are you going to work hard when you get that first job? Are you going to network? Because research also shows that 75% of jobs are never advertised. They're filled by word of mouth. So if you want to find opportunity, you have to go and build relationships yourself and get out there and find those opportunities and build relationships, and also do you have the right mindset? I meet so many young people who have come out, they've got job opportunities, but they don't want to take the job because they're waiting for the perfect job. And, you know, and they keep waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And then 5 years later, they're still unemployed. Yet research shows that if you get a job, you're about 80% likely to be employed for the rest of your life. So just get a job and get started. Even if it's not the perfect job, it's unlikely to be your last job. People are going to end up in 20 jobs in their career. So, you know, so there are many, many ways to make that investment pay off. And it's not about just waiting for the university to do it for you. And that's why I'm saying that, you know, if yes, of course, the university can do its part and needs to make sure that the quality of its programs are good and it, you know, to prepare you to have the right mindsets and to, you know, leverage its networks to help you find opportunity. But there's also a huge part that you as the young person needs to do for yourself. And so you can find people coming out of the same so-called poor quality university in any country in Africa, two outcomes, different outcomes. And very often it's because of the attitude of the young person and the things that they did for themselves to overcome all the challenges that they may not have had in that university. And so I think, you know, very often people are waiting for things to happen to them. But one thing I've learned is if you want to be successful in life, you have to take charge of your own destiny and not only wait for people to do things for you.
Powerful closing remarks. Okay, so at this point, we're going to shift into the game. And idea here is that we're going to ask a couple questions and we're just basically going to get to know a little bit from half of you guys. Because in some way, I think the viewers and listeners might know the background of you, but they also kind of, they probably only see you as a machine in an operational aspect accomplishing things. So like, these questions are supposed to break that away. So the game is called Never Have I Ever. So first question, never have I ever wanted to switch career?
It's false because I have always wanted to change my career.
Okay, yeah. So what career was it that you wanted to switch?
No, I've changed my mind all the time. When I went to college, I was going to be a lawyer, and then I was going to change after a few months to be an accountant, and then I wanted to be an actuary, and, you know, eventually ended up as a management consultant. So yeah, I wanted to be a doctor at some point, an engineer. Always changed my mind.
That's actually quite a common characteristic for people that are high achievers and high performers as well. They've tested everything at some point in their life. So quickly going to shift over to the next question. Never have I ever regretted making a purchase?
False. I have many, many regrets.
Never have I ever not liked working with any team member?
False. Yeah. I've had many team members that I wish I had, that have been difficult to work with.
Never have I ever been awake for 2 days straight?
I make sure that I get sleep. Even when I was in college and I had deadlines, I would always get at least a few hours of sleep. I've never ever, maybe only once in my lifetime have I gone the whole night without a single hour of sleep. But it definitely didn't carry on to 2 days.
And that's really surprising. At that point, I think we've learned a little bit of interesting things from you that you might have not shared online previously before. So thank you very much, Mr. Swanika. Mr. Abiodun, I'm going to ask you the same questions. So I hope you're ready. So first question is, never have I wanted to switch career?
I have, actually. I grew up thinking I was going to be an engineer because that was what my dad had kind of talked about a little bit. Then I went to university trying to be an economist. But then I ended up studying geography. Then I went into the media and I realized it's not for me full time. So yeah, I think if you've been alive long enough, you would have changed your mind about your career choices.
Yeah. Definitely agreed. You actually spoke about it previously, and yeah, you've especially in your field as a creative, it kind of begs that you have touched a lot of places and therefore create that creative mind. Yeah. Okay, so next one. Never have I ever regretted making a purchase?
I have, actually. Maybe slightly less than Mr. Swanika, because I will assume he's made a few more purchases than me. But yeah, again, you buy something and you realize it's not what you thought it was going to be.
Next question. Never have I ever hated working with team members?
Hate is a strong word you should never use, but there have been some unpleasant, truly unpleasant working experiences. And that's the most politically correct I can be about some working experiences. More positive than negatives, but yeah, human beings are not easy to get along with all the time.
Okay. Never have I ever been awake for 2 days straight.
No, hey, I try to sleep. If I actually go past 2 a.m. any day, I'll be slightly useless the next day.
All right, then. That's the end of our game.
So, yeah, this is a wonderful game, JT. Thank you for, I guess, asking them those questions. My next question would be for Fred. Could you please explain how your country's culture affected your mindset in college?
Sure. I mean, when I went to high school, primary school, I started in Ghana, and then I went to Gambia, and then to Botswana, and then to Zimbabwe. And one thing I found was a common trend across all these countries was that a lot of the education was rote-based. So the typical class consisted of a teacher coming in. We'd all stand up and greet the teacher, and then we sit down, and then the teacher starts writing on the board notes that they've been using for the last 30 years. And then you copy those notes, and then that's the end of class. There's no discussion. Sometimes if you ask a question, you get into trouble, right? So by the time I went to, you know, university, which was in the US, I had been taught just to copy material, memorize it, and regurgitate it on an exam. I had not been taught to ask questions, to challenge my teacher, to, you know, think for myself. And so it was quite a shock for me going to college and meeting all these Americans who are just asking questions and speaking up in class. And, you know, some many classes, there was a part of your grade was for class participation. And I didn't know how to do that. And I was like, what do you mean I'm supposed to, you want to hear from me? You know, my voice matters. So it took me a very long time, you know, to 3 years, 4 years. Only maybe by the time I finished college was I actually comfortable speaking in class. And the same thing when I went to business school. I had all these Americans who were saying all these clever things. I thought they were smarter than me because they all knew what to say. They were much more comfortable speaking up. And so I was surprised when on graduation day, I walked on stage and I found out I had graduated in the top 10% of my class. Because all these guys, some, you know, who had been talking a lot in class clearly didn't know as much as I did. But they just were used to talking in this. So that's one of the things that we need to change about our African education systems. Because if I was educated in 4 countries and this was what I experienced in all those countries, then I would say it's probably a broader trend across the continent, and we need to, you know, create education systems that bring out the voices of young people much earlier, get people, you know, get used to speaking up and asking questions, engaging in discussions and debate. That's what's going to prepare them for life later on.
So a question here is, why are African universities seen as why they're seen as inferior compared to universities, you know, US, England, Australia? And why is it that when hearing someone got a degree from an African university, it might come off as less meaningful?
I mentioned this earlier, that a university cannot be separated from the environment in which it is situated. Right. It's the same reason many of us dream about living abroad, right? You dream about it because you've seen and you've heard and you've experienced in some cases that the options are just a lot better than where you're coming from. So there are lots of factors that make non-African universities largely better than African universities. Physical infrastructure is the one. You just can't compare, right? Learning facilities are the others. You really can't compare. Our laboratories are far less stocked than laboratories in other spaces. If you want to do research on the sciences, even in the humanities, the learning spaces, the quality of thought that has been facilitated, it's unfortunate, but again, it's not surprising, it's not sad, you know, at the level where we have to mope and say, my gosh, it's so disastrous. It's just the reality that our societies are not yet as evolved as some other societies, and so the universities themselves reflect those societies. It's also the options that are available to you through those universities. You know, Fred was talking about, you know, having that nervousness about actually even contributing in classes while he was in the US. It was the exact same thing for me. You know, I got in my classes for my master's degree, and I didn't have the confidence to ask questions the way my classmates could. I mean, there were guys who just had their hands up the whole time. And I kept thinking, what is wrong with this guy? Like, let the professor speak, you know? But for him, it was an interaction between him and the professor, and it almost became a one-to-one. And the rest of us were the audience. And I kept thinking, how is this even normal? But then, when it came to assessment time, I wrote a paper for my master's degree, and I was scored a B plus or an A minus. And the professor wrote me back. The professor wrote me back with notes about what I could include to get an A in that paper, right? You know, so having written to the best of my ability, I wrote this paper. I was called a B plus, I think, or an A minus. And the professor says, if you rewrite your paper and you incorporate this point and that point and that point, you can get an A. I was thinking, are you kidding me right now? You're giving me the option to score a higher grade than what I earlier scored. And I went back and rewrote my paper, you know, made one or two tweaks, and I got an A in that paper. And it just blew my mind. It blew my mind to think that there was compassion. This professor was trying to figure out, how do you get better? Not how do I diminish you? And that for me was a huge, huge difference from my undergrad education on the continent, in which the professor sets a standard you cannot attain. Here is someone else trying to lift me up while someone else was trying to put me down. So when there's just so much that makes it impossible to compare. We've got ways to go. We will get there, I believe. We got to keep pushing. But today, we're not there yet, sadly.
What a powerful way to end. Wow. Okay, so my last question really for this episode is, we've been talking about how education is a choice, university is a choice throughout the this recording, but for those people where it's not a choice, how do you avoid the pressure of going to college when this is what everyone expects you to do to succeed?
I mean, you've got to understand what propels that thought process, that pressure around you, right? Assuming you're the child of a, you know, public bus driver somewhere in Africa, your father's a public bus driver, your mother is a, you know, a domestic help somewhere, and you get the chance to uplift your family from that kind of situation by going to university, having the chance to hustle for a better job. You don't have the luxury, really, of saying, well, I think I'm going to go try things out, you know, because your parents are looking at you like, look, we didn't have the options that you have. And now you have those options and you're choosing to say no to that. That kind of child is growing up with pressure. You've got multiple constituents. You're not only responsible to yourself. You're now responsible for so many more people. You've got so much else to think about. So yes, there are lots of people who are growing up without feeling as though they've really got the luxury of choice. You know, family pressures are heavy. Society itself is made up of an aggregate of pressures. We've all arrived at where we are because of the agitation that people over time have had for a better society. So I would say to whoever finds themselves in that kind of conundrum where you want to explore a few different things and you're not super, super sure what to do, but there are pressures to do it, you can't really deny your society to pursue personal joy and expect that society's support over time, right? No matter how high you fly, the bird will still come back down to perch, you know? So it's a tough balancing act, but you've got to be true to who you are as much as you're true to those who helped you get to where you are, where you got to today. So you got to just find that fine balance. School is not punishment. School is not a pain. School is not a sentence. It could be a space that does so much more for you. And even when you're super, super clear that school is not in the cards for you, if your society needs you, one of the greatest acts of leadership in life might be to serve your society. And do it. Do it for those who helped you get to where you are, especially because school is not a detriment. It's positive. And you can make it positive as well.
So we've reached the end of this episode. Thank you very, very much to both of our guests today for joining us.
simply for sharing your stories, sharing insights. We're very, very, very much grateful. I feel like I've said very so many times, but thank you so much. Thank you to our Mind Shakers, of course, for listening to this episode on how essential is college education in Africa. Mind Shakers, as usual, we encourage you to go out there and share anything you might have learned from this episode as we strive to learn together and boldly shape the world. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening through to the end.
If you enjoyed it, please like and subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. But come on, let's do all of them, you know?
There's going to be more exciting episodes to come. So don't forget to follow us on Instagram at MIND_SHACK_.
So, see you on the next one.